session number 20092, Reel 1.
Derek Lester, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Edgware, Middlesex.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Edgware?
Yes, I did.
Which school did you go to?
Edgware Council School.
And how old were you when you left there?
School leaving age.
14?
14, yes.
So that sounds like it probably was 1937.
Yes.
Did you get a job?
I used to help my father, who had a shoe shop at that time, in the shop as a child. My first job was 14. I worked for an estate office in Henley Central.
Is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes, it was.
You hadn't joined the TA before the war?
No, I hadn't.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes.
Under what circumstances?
Well, my father and I were in a car on the way from where we lived in Burnt Oak to Edgware to play tennis. We were actually in tennis gear, all ready to play. And the siren went. And that was the time.
How did you feel about the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, obviously one is not too happy about the fact that it's a war, but on the other hand, that's the way life is.
How did the war affect you at first, if at all?
It didn't affect me at first at all until my father, by that time in 1939, had sold the shop where he was, and he then went to Kingsbury, and I helped him in the shop there. What did you say to me? How did I feel?
How the war affected you?
The war didn't really affect me until, other than the fact that I met Joyce, and she was in the sub-post office in Kingsbury, and it didn't really affect me until I was called up.
Hadn't you been in any bombing?
No, not, well, say bombing in the suburbs. We had a couple of bombs near where we lived, yes. But intermittent wasn't very great. You know, I wasn't in the bombing night in the East End.
What was your address at that time?
Burnt Oak, Edgware.
Do you remember the name of the street?
Yes, Red Hill Drive.
So there were very few bombs around there?
Very few, yes. There weren't very many.
Can you tell me about being called up, please?
Yes, in 1942 I was called up. And I did my training at Gallagate Camp in Richmond. And when I left there after 3 months, I was put into the East Yorkshire Infantry Regiment. And from there on we went to different places. We were under canvas in Wales. I was under canvas on Goodwood Racecourse, various places. But I finished up just pre Normandy landings, pre that. I finished up in Sanderstead in Surrey. And I was in there when the V1s were coming over.
What did you see of that?
Well, I didn't. I was billeted in one of these big old houses, and I happened to be in the room right in the top of the building, so they were nearly coming down the chimney. There was a lot of bombs in Croydon at that time, a lot of V1s dropped in there. But, you know, we survived, and we left from there to go to Normandy.
How had you coped with the training that you'd had?
Oh, that was fine. All right. Lost a few pounds in weight.
And how had the people in charge treated you in the training?
Oh, fine. No problem. You know, it was a tough course, but you had to be.
Were most of the people in this battalion from East Riding?
There's a lot of them from Yorkshire, yes, Barnsley area, different places. And it was a mixture of Yorkshire people, which I would say was 60%, and 40% Londoners. And so it was either Cockneys or Yorkshire people in the regiment.
Did the Cockneys and the Yorkshiremen mix together, or keeping the two cliques?
No, they mixed together.
How did they get on with each other?
Fine. You soon get an area of comradeship when you train and live together.
Do you remember which company you were in?
B Company.
Do you remember the names of any of the people in charge, any of the NCOs or officers?
No, I don't remember their names. I was captured. When I was captured, I was taken with a chap called Fred Martin, who came from Leeds, and he was captured, and another chap from Cheshire, who was captured. There was a whole patrol was captured, about seven of us.
Let's go back to Sanderstead, because you said that was just before D-Day.
That's right, it's just before D-Day.
Can you take me through what happened about how you went to Normandy, please?
Yes, I went over from... where does Roland live?
Portsmouth?
No.
Haven?
New Haven. I went from New Haven over to Normandy, and I left. I got that was about D-Day plus 12, and we landed, and then we went on to Caen, which had been virtually flattened by the 1,000 bomber raids. And that was full of Canadians. We took over from the Canadians who had taken Caen. And we were in Caen for a couple of weeks before we moved north towards Germany.
Were you in any fighting in Normandy?
Yes, quite a bit.
Can you describe it, please?
Well, it's something that's pretty unpleasant now when you think about it, but... well, we did a lot of attacks, and during that time, up to Arnhem, we were based to get... I was picked up and taken prisoner on the day that they dropped at Arnhem, which was September the 18th, and finished up in a prisoner of war camp in Austria. Stalag 18C.
Can you describe the circumstances under which you were captured, please?
Well, we were a patrol. I was a corporal, and I had another corporal who was acting sergeant, and there was seven of us in the patrol, and we were crossing a cabbage field full of cabbages and approaching a farmhouse when we came under fire, and we replied, and anyway, they rushed us. There was a German, what I call a German platoon, which was about 40 people. They just rushed us with fixed bayonets, and that was that. It was either you couldn't get out of it from then onwards. We hadn't got much option. And we were taken to back behind their lines, and we were taken all our stuff out of our watches and our wallets and things, and we were stripped out of our personal property, and and then we had we were lined up against a hedge, facing the hedge, and there was a chap about 200 yards behind with a machine gun, and we all looked at one another and thought that was our last time, but as it happens, they came round the corner of the hedge, at the end of the hedgerow, with a tray full of coffee, which, having been at our thought our last moments, the coffee was very welcome.
In this fight, when you were captured, were there casualties on either side?
There wasn't on our side, but there was on their side, I'm sure. We saw one or two fellas with bullets in their... I saw one chap with bullets in his arm. Anyway, that was that particular thing. Before then, of course, we'd come to the Escaut Canal, we'd cross the canal, and we did an attack in the German positions, and that's the next day we went, that's where we were captured. We sent a patrol out, and I was one of them, and I on that attack before that, I was with two mortarmen, and we were going up a hedgerow, and they were firing 88s at us, which was their big guns, and we were attacking a position, we cooperating with tanks, and they say you never hear the one that gets you, but there was one of these shells dropped right in amongst the three of us, and unfortunately the other two guys that were with me, I was covered in all their blood. They had arms hanging off and God knows what, and there wasn't a scratch on me. So I just had to, at that time, go and stop one of the tanks, and the tank commander gave me a bottle of whiskey, and I took it back to the chaps and revived them, and got the field dressing out of their pockets here, and did my best to bandage them up. And after that, I made sure that they got back all right. The stretcher bearers came and that, and then went on from there. And as I say, the next day I was captured myself.
I think you know the day that you were captured, do you?
I think it was the day that they dropped at Arnhem, and I believe that was September the 18th, I think, 1944.
And I think you know which division you were in.
I was in the 3rd Division, V Yorkshire's.
What did the Germans do and say to you once they took you captive?
Well, they took us back to what they call an area where they distributed you to different POW camps, and I wanted to go with my two friends who were both corporals, so I was a lance corporal, so I took a stripe off of one sleeve and put it on the other and went back with them as a corporal. And we were together in a camp at Marco Pongo in Austria, 18C, and we spent 9 months there. And we came back in a Dakota from an airport just over the border from Germany.
Pardon?
It was near Klagenfurt where we came back. Well, that was where we were in a POW camp near Klagenfurt. Place called Marco Pongo, but we came back over the German border and waited on an airfield for 2 days for these Dakotas were coming in and taking us back. They took us to Lyon Reims in France, and there they transferred us to, I came home in a Wellington bomber in the end.
How were you treated in POW camp?
Well, it was the trouble with the area we were in. There was no summer or winter. It was all there was no spring. It was all summer or winter. So one day it was boiling hot, and a couple of days later it was freezing cold, and there's snow everywhere. When they came to look for the wireless that obviously was in the camp, they threw us all out in the snow and God knows what, searching for the radio. Well, we were getting nightly bulletins in the POW camp because the radio was down the hole of a toilet. It was encased in they'd encased it in a side of a big old-fashioned toilet, and so we got regular news bulletins. But unfortunately, all the lines of communication were being bombed, and so the Red Cross parcels which were necessary to keep us alive, were very sparse. And but we survived. By the time I got home, I think I was down to 8 stone 6, but we survived on a bowl of skilly a day, which is just a sort of coloured water and few bits of potato in it, and but the parcels were, we only had one delivery of parcels all the time that I was there for 9 months, but got a little bit of post and stuff from home, clothes, army clothes, and that, so really that was the POW thing, and that lasted about 9 months.
Did the Germans discover the radio?
No.
Do you remember the names of any of your comrades in the camp?
Only the two that I went in with, Fred Martin, and I've forgotten the other one now.
So were they all English soldiers in the camp?
They were all English soldiers. This camp was, the Frenchmen were there, the Russians were there, and we used to go over the wire at night and exchange clothes for food. They were short of clothes and we were short of food.
So who were?
The British camp people were short of food in comparison to the French or the Russians, and that they're all in different parts. So somebody used to go over the wire, it's usually me, at night, and exchange, walk through their barracks and exchange. But you had to do it in between the searchlights, so it wasn't too easy and a bit risky, I suppose.
How were the German guards behaving towards you?
Well, they were pretty old. They were all the young ones who were sent to the Russian front. They were all old. But they were okay. They weren't too bad at all. They knew the war was ending, I'm sure.
Who liberated the camp?
Americans liberated the camp from Patton's army.
Can you describe what happened on the day of liberation?
Yes, I can. I can describe the fact that we were, a lot of the chaps in the camp, were, once the guards had gone, they just put down their arms and went. And a lot of the chaps in the camp, I didn't do it myself, went up the mountains and got hold of some sheep and killed them and tried to feed ourselves. But we all had dysentery in the end anyway. It wasn't very pleasant.
What do you think now about having served in the East Yorkshires during the war?
What do I think, sorry?
About having served in the East Yorkshires during the war.
No, it was fine. As far as I was concerned, it was a regiment where I was told to go to. It was no problem.
Did the war change you in any way?
Changed my figure a bit. not really, I suppose. It made me a little hostile towards Germany after the war. I was very anti-German, obviously, but I would be. It's understandable. But in all, we weren't treated too badly, really. Nothing like the Japanese camps at all, I'm sure. The main problem we had was food. But the Germans never had any food anyway. They were looking after us. So they were starving as well as us. The other prisoners in the camp that we were in had been transferred from Italy right the way through from Greece, and they'd been prisoners for several years. They were taken in the Western Desert, and they'd been transferred all the way across Europe, and gradually they finished up in Austria. And a few of us who were new boys in the camp had just joined them. But they were in a pretty bad way. They were wire-happy, or what we called wire-happy. They were certainly a little bit eccentric. But, really, they were in a worse condition than we were when we were released, because they'd been there too long.
In what ways did the wire-happiness show itself?
Well, they were a little bit upstairs, as I call it. A little bit mentally unsound. They were, you couldn't, all they would talk about was eggs and bacon, you know, they couldn't really talk about anything. They were pretty, after all that time locked up and moved from one place to another, we found them, us chaps coming in, that they were not really of sound mind, you know, they were.
You mean they were obsessed with food?
They were obsessed with food, and all they could do was talk about home and getting home. Fair enough, but they weren't very stable at all. But it's understandable, they've been thrown around all over Europe.
I think you were telling me earlier that there was some special holiday available.
Yes, the government offered double rations on food to some of the hotels, and if hotels and bed and breakfast places would take some of the ex-prisoners, offer them special holidays with double food, which we, Joyce and I, went on when we came back, and we got married first.
No, we didn't.
No, we didn't. We went on holiday to Cornwall, Newquay in Cornwall, and had a week down there with this chap and his wife from Kenton, who'd come out of the camp, had been locked up for a long time, and we went down there to Newquay with him on holiday. We had a week's holiday there on double rations. It's an idea to build up some of the prisoners, really, that had lost a lot of weight in that. So that's about that, really. There was a lot of people went on it, didn't they?
They took it up, yes, they did. Mm. Yes.
What state was the chap from Kenton in?
A little bit unreal, wasn't he? Mm.
Yes, he's introverted, really.
I think his wife was going to have a problem getting back to know him again after he'd been away so long.
What specifically was wrong with him then?
Well, just specifically, he was, I would call it of unsound mind, but he was just mentally wasn't right. That's all I can really say.
He was within himself, wasn't he?
Yeah, he'd gone within himself completely.
Mm. Was he able to communicate with other people?
Yes, he was, but you had to bear with him, really.
But his wife was with him?
Yes. You had to understand. People wouldn't have known what he'd been through. He'd been through a lot, this chap. But he was okay.
Did the marriage survive?
As far as we know, we never really knew. We never heard, no. We lost touch.